time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin'.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It is Monday, November 2nd, one day before the big day, the big election. Hope you have registered, you're voted, or voting, and make sure you have your voice heard. Join the many multiple record volumes of people getting out voting earlier. We're grateful for you showing us support. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we're just so grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. Our hot topic today is Joe Tyrell. He is now the president of ICE Mortgage Technology. Joe was with Ellie Mae, now is part of, they're rebranding it as ICE Mortgage Technology. Very excited. We're going to be having a discussion about digital mortgage transformation. Ellie Mae becomes ICE and all the changes that are. Really interesting stuff. I've always enjoyed Joe's comments, his perspective on things. I think he's one of the realists. He's thinking, you know, what would be nice and what can be done in reality. So we're going to be hearing some of that today. So be sure to stay tuned for the interview with Joe Tyrell in the second half of the podcast in the Hot Topic segment. I want to say a special thank you to the Industry Syndicate for all that they're doing for publishing our podcast as well as other podcasts. Check out industrysyndicate.com as well as mortgagemedia.com. Great places to get a lot of content on what's going on in the industry. Also, I want to say a special thanks to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Go listen to the podcast last week where we had Dawn on talking about the virtual conference, the first of its kind. Also, I want to talk about Finastra, one of my favorite technology companies out there in the place, working with mortgage bot solutions, automatically addresses a lot of compliance issues while delivering enhanced borrower satisfaction, increasing productivity. But you got to check out all the innovation that's going on at Finastra. Go to our website, lickitonlending.com, check on advertisers. You'll see a list of some links out to their website. Encourage you to check them out. Also, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative, both of these are mortgage co-ops creating competitive advantages for both lenders and vendor members. Working with Tom Gallucci, who's at TMC, looking forward at the Mortgage Collaborative, going to have him on as a guest coming up here soon. And really excited about some of the things that they have going on. The Colt Labs is really one of those things that is really innovative and helping lenders share best practices. The Community Mortgage Lenders of America, grateful for their partnership, as well as Indicom, offering automation, outsourcing, compliance solutions at every stage of the mortgage life cycle. Again, we had Linda Bomar on. Great podcast. I encourage you to go check that out, as well as Incelerate. Josh and his team at Incelerate are helping lenders get close to closing more loans through better engagement. You want to check it out, what they're doing there. Ainsworth Advisors. Go to ainsworthadvisors.com, how you can set up your own advisory firm for your firm. Really, it's important to have that. As well as AI Assist, artificial intelligence. Man, that is so important what's going on right now. It's scary and exciting what it can do for you. But be sure to check out AI Assist. Appreciate you for checking out all our sponsors, Celebrity Home Loans, as well as Innovient. They do a great job of optimizing their mortgage executions. We're going to have Ted Kramer on as a guest here in an upcoming podcast, as well as Knowledge Coop, this great learning management platform to help you get training done for your staff, as well as Mobility RE and Modex. Both of these are great products that help you recruit top LOs, as well as find out who is funding what and with whom. Also, VendorSurf, Vidyard. Be sure to check out all our sponsors on our sponsorship page. Let's get over to Rob Van Raphorst with this week's Mortgage Minute.
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, HUD extended the FHA appraisal and re-verification of employment flexibilities through December 31st, 2020. The updated policy permits the ongoing use of exterior-only appraisals for most transactions, but discontinues the desktop-only appraisal option. MBA will continue to advocate for these flexibilities to be extended for the duration of the pandemic. Also last week, FHFA released the 2020 Annual Housing Report, which provides an overview of the affordable housing activities of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac during the course of 2019. In both the single-family and multifamily markets, Each GSE met all of its housing goals in 2019. Also, FHFA determined that each GSE complied with its duty to serve requirements in all three underserved markets: manufacturing housing, affordable housing preservation, and rural housing. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, Rob.
I want to say to the MBA and all the conferences that they have coming up in 2021, we need to show up at these conferences. Not like it's going to take a lot of encouragement for us to show up at conferences. We are so ready for engagement again. Anyway, check it out. I've got to get over to Les Parker with the TM Spotlight.
What if they say they're not like the others? What if fools say they're not just another one of Fed's plays? Who's the pretender? What if trends say they will never surrender?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Dueling narratives point to different worlds. Will the election produce a red wave or blue wave or litigious wave? Are voices crying for freedom or protections? Should the world isolate the Chinese Communist Party for its opaque and corrupt business practices or embrace them as a competitive economic powerhouse? Do we get less Fed or more Fed? Will rates rise or fall? Who falls to their knees? These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter. So who stays free? So who stays free?
Okay.
Stay free.
That's good. Let's talk about tmspotlight.com to sign up for Les's free newsletter. And also be sure to put in the word power and you'll get a paid version for free. Anyway, appreciate it very much. Matt, good to have you here again. Matt Graham, founder and CEO of MBS Live, is our newest contributor with a market update. Matt, what do you have for us? I'm wheeling around looking at your screen like I do all the time. Looks like we got some activity going on in the 30-year UMBS. What is happening?
That's right, Dave. How's it going?
Good.
Good, yes. And there's some stuff going on behind the scenes that you wouldn't even see on the MBS Live dashboard until potentially later this week. And that's because we are evaluating liquidity in UMBS 1.5 coupon, something that a lot of people thought we would never see until post-COVID, sent rates going where they've been going. But anytime we're cracking into one of these new lower coupons in MBS, it's always a saga. And it takes weeks, if not months, for the market to build up enough liquidity for the thing to get viable. And then for FINRA to start reporting it as its own coupon and for lenders to hedge with it. And once that starts happening, it can help lenders maintain their margins better and help pricing be more consistent in the lower reaches of the rate range. So a lot of people are really excited to see this come to fruition. But the big news last week is that the Fed announced that they were adding it to their MBS bond buying plan. So as you may know, they put out a schedule that lets people know what they're going to be buying on any given day. And that's something a lot of us have been waiting for. It's great to see. And from here, we want to see the thing do well. In order to do well, it's going to need rates to stay in a decent range. And that range, I think, is probably a little bit higher and wider than some of us might fear. In other words, we had 10-year yields rise from 0.5 all the way up to 0.88 recently. And some of us might worry what that's going to do to mortgage rates, but mortgage rates didn't really budge very much. We went a little bit higher here and there, but most of the volatility was due to the adverse market fee. There is room for the mortgage market to soak up some increase in benchmarks. And when we talk about benchmark rates, we're talking about the yardstick by which everything else is measured, 10-year treasury yield. So it'll hopefully help see rates in the mid twos. If we can even stay anywhere under 1% in 10-year yields, then mortgage rates could be mid to low twos quite easily. I'm guessing you might like to know a little bit about what happened last week.
What happened last week?
Yeah, it started strong, right? We had been having a bad October for benchmark rates. So even though mortgage rates were holding steady, we always worry what the indication is from treasuries. Started strong, and it looked like we were pushing back from a high yields at 0.88.
Right.
But then the second half of the week, things got a little bit ugly. But why? Because stocks definitely weren't surging towards significantly higher levels. And we didn't have any like resoundingly positive economic data that had an obvious and immediate effect on the bond market. Now, we could definitely point to stronger durable goods at 1.9 versus 0.5. GDP 33.1 came in stronger than expected. Chicago PMI, those were the three most relevant reports of the week, all in the second half of the week. and rates moved higher. So maybe it wasn't that simple, because we would have seen markets react immediately if that was the case. And as you may know, they didn't. So we also have the European Central Bank last Thursday, and the bond yield spiked right after they got done talking. I have no idea there's a connection between that or not, because there wasn't anything they said specifically that made European react, but they're not increasing their level of accommodation any more than they already had. Sometimes bond markets don't necessarily love that. I'll tell you what I think. That traders on both sides, both stocks and bonds, were running for the exits. Let me ask you, if you were putting your money to work and you knew what was coming up this week, would you want to leave yourself very exposed to risk getting into the weekend?
No, I was looking at what happened in the bonds, specifically the UMBS 2s on the 30-year, and looking at that going, I think this is everyone's just taking conservative ground. So no, you're right. Just take the risk off the table.
That's what I'm thinking. And what's going on this week? Let's talk about some big market movers in the same way. In The Princess Bride, that he asked him about Socrates, Aristotle, moron. So I'll ask you, have you ever heard of these big market movers? You have NFP, non-farm payrolls. You have ISM, manufacturing and non-manufacturing. And then even FOMC, a Fed meeting. All huge market movers, right?
At least they used to be.
They're completely meaningless this week, Dave, of course. And I'll clarify really quick. These things could still put some spin on the ball. But the biggest reaction, the biggest shift in momentum is reserved for the reaction to the election. And there are plenty of guesses as to what type of result will lead to a certain outcome for the bond market. There were a lot of guesses in 2016 too. And I would say, not being able to count all of them, I think the majority of the guesses about what a Trump victory was going to do to the bond market in 2016 were wrong. And the narrative quickly shifted to the tax bill and treasury issuance and the economic benefits that would come from that. And the rates went up and away. The narrative that I hear more right now is that a Biden victory and a blue flip in the Senate would be bad for stocks and rates. And we have seen some evidence of that. When polling numbers have come out at times last week, at least it would seem that way. It's hard to confirm that that's exactly what markets are reacting to. Either way, the important point of distinction this week is not who wins the election, but whether or not there is unified control of both parts of Congress and the presidency. If it's unified Democratic control, that is the biggest market mover.
I'm looking at reading some of the MBS live chats on here. Looking at Tim Rood giving you a big shout out. If this website did nothing other than give us indisputable data to deal with in situations like this, would be worth it. But obviously, there's just that's just the tip of the iceberg on all the knowledge that's here. And so shout out to Ted on what he is saying here and all the commentary. It's just fun reading through and getting a sense of how people are responding and reacting. And
if you want to see it get rowdy, Dave, just tune in on election night. I think people will probably be in the live chat all night long. And I'm going to have to stay up late and keep the peace because, you know, people get with politics, but it'll be fun.
Yep. And then also I love the live news stream where you're in here and then you just click on stuff. I love your website, Matt, and I love the fact that you're here. Anything else we need to know before we move on?
Oh, yes, Dave, I almost forgot. There were some bright spots. We talked about rates moving up last week, but real quick, here's your bright spot. Even though some of the housing data leveled off, it did so at great levels, and I'm not really going to pick that apart. But what I did want to focus on was that FHFA home price data that I alluded to last week. That thing came in extremely high, 8% year-over-year pace versus 6.5 last month. And what that means is that we are two out of three pieces we have now to figure out what the conforming loan limit's going to go up to in a little less than a month now. And right now it's tracking for nearly 550,000. That home price appreciation or the calculation for that's directly based on that FHFA number. It's a little bit of a different variation that they keep, but substantially similar and good news for conforming loan limits coming up in about 4 weeks.
Yeah. Good stuff, Matt. Appreciate it. Check out mbslive.net. And when you're there,
don't forget your
LOL. Double the time of your trial period. So thank you so much, Matt, for making this available to our listeners and extending the trial period. That's really appreciated. Everyone should just sign up for it. It's just an excellent service. Great week to you, my friend. I know you're going to be a busy one. So anyway, appreciate the shout outs and the alerts you give us constantly, ongoing stuff. Really good stuff. Appreciate you, Matt.
Thank you, sir.
All right, you bet. Let's get over to Alice Alvey with the legislative update. Alice, of course, is a CMB vice president of education training at Union Home Mortgage, and she's got this week's weekly update. And my favorite thing is if you work at Union Home and you have a question about something, you can quote unquote ask Alice. So we get to do the Ask Alice all the time, anywhere. I love that.
That's shout right.
Out. Yes. Now, the latest in the legislative update there.
Yes, you can almost hear Grace Slick singing in the background. Maybe we'll have to get Les to use that song, too, although I think the royalties might be expensive. But anyway, so I have two things to just call to everyone's attention. One is a little bit minor, something to pay attention to is not imminent. But the other one is to talk about online notarization as we talk about going out to vote tomorrow, or if you haven't done so already, and really trying to look ahead to just where we're at with the coronavirus. And are we headed following Europe to another lockdown phase? So I'll talk about that in a second. But first up is the CFPB did publish an advance notice the proposed rulemaking, right? And this has been a long process for the Section 1033 of the Dodd-Frank Act. And for those of you who've gotten the industry in the last 5 to 8 years, you're going, seriously? That's not all implemented yet? Nope, there's still a section out there that we haven't got on the books, and that's the one for consumer financial service providers and just really more consumer access to financial information. So CFPB had an RFI back in 2016. They have released consumer protection principles that lenders could use to follow, but of course that doesn't have the power of a rule for enforcement. So they have been working on this. It's just taken quite some time. So we finally have gotten to the ANPR stage. After that will come the proposed rule stage after they get some more feedback. So the idea is the key for lenders in this one is our connectivity to get automated income and asset information. Think about how we all love that we can get the borrower's password and ID or get the borrower to key that in. So that we can get direct connect through their bank and employer information and really speed along our business process. So that activity is something that's an example of what would be included in this proposed rule that the agency has to address. So we'll read through it. We'll talk more about it as it gets a little closer. We've got 90 days to respond, which gives us till January 20th. So we've got some time there, but always worth watching that our technology is always on the radar of the CFPB to make sure we're taking care of consumers and protecting all of that. But in bigger news, I think as we look about the possibility of are we headed for another lockdown or more restrictions as the virus starts to take a stronger hold? And again, some of you may believe that's not the case, but as far as some of the numbers and some of where the indications are, it does look like that's a possibility. So the whole industry is looking towards trying to be more efficient with remote online notarization, other ways to make life easier for consumers. So I sent Dave a link that will be on the website. You all take a look at a summary of what states, there's only 28 states that allow a remote online notarization. We have got to push for this as an industry, support the MBA. We have to get federal legislation that allows the intercommerce necessary and gets the states moving, at least maybe gives them a model law so that we can get this implemented. So there is Senate Bill 353 that was put out back in March, along with the companion House bill. So it's not like Congress is at ground zero on this. We've got a couple of bills already out there that we can work with called the Secure Act, and this will help us get remote and electronic notarization through. We've got to find a way to keep closing loans remotely, and that's a big key of it. So wanted everybody to reach out to your congressman. Make sure you're pushing that at the state level. Looks like Pennsylvania has a bill sitting on the governor's desk ready to be signed, but there's a lot of work to be done here so that we can all operate as it looks like the virus isn't going to let up anytime soon. Some great website resources that I can also send to you guys. Deloitte published a report that really talks about things that you need to think about as a lender. There's a whole section on the impact to the global and residential market, and that will help lenders to make sure they haven't thought about all the implications. We've had increased volume. That's awesome. But there's a huge impact to risk management and the financials as well. Back to dusting all that off and thinking it through to be able to manage the next wave. Back to you, Dave.
Will it be another wave? I think it's going to be really interesting. Yeah, because I'm planning to go to England for an event in February, and I went down into lockdown again, and I'm going, yeah. So we'll see. Thanks. Anyway, I'll be knocking at the door. So anyway, appreciate you so much, Alice, for being here each and every week. Say hi to Al and Bill, and again, kudos to them for creating a system internally within your company called Ask Alice. We get to do that every week. Anyway, thank you, Alice. All right, let's go to Alan Pollock. We've got this week's tech update from Mr. Alan. He was sharing something before we went just live.
NFC technology. And what that does is it stands for near field communications. And these are basically almost like beacons or tags. Retail stores use them. If you're using their app, they can track you as you walk around the store. Actually, yeah, let's get into it. We got all kinds of good data. I do want to mention, David, you brought up a fantastic documentary show on Netflix that I haven't seen, and I'm disappointed I haven't, but The Social Dilemma, you said it's great.
It just was a major eye-opener to realize just how extensive they're tracking us.
Absolutely. Get out there. Go watch it. Some of us are sick of the politics at this point. We're getting down to the wire, and then we'll need something new to watch. I did want to just do a shout-out, right, to Fannie Mae and to the industry about the new IRLA. And just remember that January 1st, 2021, I know, Alice, your ears are probably ringing, is open production. So make sure your vendors are up to speed, their code, their interfaces, things are tested. Don't feel bad asking them. I'm sure that you're already engaged with your vendors and in sync. And for the vendors, if there's resources out there, should you need them, but timeline's coming. So I just wanted to give that little shout out, cover that aspect of it. All right, CoreLogic, as we know, there was takeover is a bad word, but right, some of the current investors wanted to try and devalue the company and say that to get it to go in the right direction, they had to take it over, et cetera. After months of feeding off of that from two of their significant investors, CoreLogic has confirmed they actually are looking for a new buyer. There's word on the street that CoreLogic could be valued at about a little over $80 a share. There's some speculation as to who it may be. Zero decision has been made, and CoreLogic was very firm in their comments on the press release, saying that the company does not intend to comment further on market speculation or disclose further developments unless it deems any further disclosure to be appropriate or require communication. So obviously they're being very quiet about it, but there's rumors and stories out there. But $80 a share is what people are talking about. Okay, talking about $80 a share, let's jump up to $40 million in seed funding. An ex-Zillow executive, company called Tomo Networks. I feel like we talked about it on a prior week. There's not a lot of word about what it is, but they're getting into a very crowded space, and they're talking about it's going to be a compelling product that will streamline home buying for both the consumer and real estate agent. And the fact that, you know, they've got this all-star cast, especially an ex-exec from Zillow, means that maybe they're mixing some things together that typically don't mix together, or they're refining how things will work. But I'm very interested. So I've got a tracker set up for Tomo Networks. And if that's something you do, keep an eye out for them. FHA David talking about volume, lockdowns, RONs, you name it. FHA has just unveiled their AUS system. That's Automated Underwriting Systems for those non-technical or acronym folks. That's part of their modernization initiative. And I don't know if you remember, but recently it was a two-year, $42 million contract, which absolutely blows my mind that building an underwriting system can cost that much money, but it really does. Anyways, it's called the FHA Catalyst Technology Platform. It stops you from having to go to 10 or 15 different systems. You can go one transaction directly to their system, API interface built so you can connect with them. It's got reliable and accurate data. I'm reading a quote, by the way, from them, reliable and accurate data, facilitating the modern systems for the FHA program participant community. A lot of fancy words, but that is really important, especially as we look to lowering the amount of overhead, time, reduce errors, right? All the things we talk about every week. So really good. This one, David, the next topic, really funny. It caught my eye because I did work with Google many years ago, and so did many other people for the mortgage industry. And if you remember, I don't know, within this last year, we talked about how Google relaunched their sort of mortgage quote program. Roostify just partnered with Google Cloud to deliver an enhanced document AI capability platform. And really what they're doing is they're leveraging OCR and data extraction. Google's got a platform. It's much easier to acquire that kind of technology today. And they're looking to help move the document acquisition and automate that process using machine learning, moving that ahead. And that's what it is. So if you're very interested in either the Google Cloud having that, you can check out that article. If you are a Roostify user, then you want to check out Roostify. Thought that was a great update. David, I just want to talk quickly about campaigns and elections in support of what's happening this week. And then I want to get into the big topic, what to do with the rest of this year's development priorities. So I thought this was really interesting, David, about campaigns. I had no idea that there is a ton of data being collected. You have systems use machine learning and artificial intelligence to try and determine where and what battlegrounds and what states and what municipalities, how voters think, how that technology can help create benchmarks and identify information. So over the last few years, campaigns have been adding to the vast amount of personal data they keep on every single voter. And campaigns right now are spending upwards of 80% of their ad budgets on what's called direct response ads. Those are things that collect data on us. They're things that collect information on how we look at ads on Facebook. They actually can upload a list of people to Facebook that can target those individual people and then track, do they click on it, do they forward it, all kinds of information about it. And then even what other cookies on your computer know about you. Anyways, campaigns can collect between 500 and 2,500 data points, which is wild. And even phone calls, every call is a data point. I just want to mention two quick things as we end this segment, David. One is, in the world of being bombarded with webinars and all kinds of other stuff, I am actually hosting for my company a webinar in 2 weeks. I'll mention it again next week with more details. It's about loan officer compensation and with this increased volume, how difficult it's actually going to be. And the second thing is I've got two people that are looking to hire auditors, underwriters, and even folks that can manage investor guidelines and data for databases. If you are that person or of that person, feel free to reach out to me. And for any other topic as well, you can reach me at Alan, A-L-E-N, at TMS-advisors.com.
Appreciate it so much, Alan. You're good, man. Very good report. Very good stuff. Lots. That's so much going on. Looking forward to it. Folks, that ends the regular podcast, which is the weekly update we refer to as the market update. Now we're going to move right on in to the hot topic segment. If you're listening on a downloaded basis, just stay right here. It'll move right on there. If you're listening live, don't go anywhere. We're going to go right into it. I was really excited about connecting up with Joe Tyrell because I respect him so much. I respect what his thoughts are. He does a good job of sorting out where's the compass? What do they need to look at? And we're going to get into that in this podcast. So caught up with him this past week, and I'm excited to share with you that interview now. I'm honored to have Joe Tyrell joining us today. We're talking about the future of Ellie Mae with the recent acquisition by ICE. Joe, good to have you here.
David, great to be with you.
It's an honor. First of all, everyone was amazed when you sold what you did and then less than a year to have that kind of increase. They saw something in you. So talk about how the transition going and how is there any reorganization going on, Joe?
Yeah, so David, it's been a great outcome for Ellie Mae, but not just for Ellie Mae. ICE, Intercontinental Exchange, had also owned other assets in this space, specifically Simplifile and MERS. So essentially what's happening is we're all coming together as one organization known as ICE Mortgage Technology, and you'll hear a lot more about that brand from us going forward. But really, this is something that ICE has been looking at us for a number of years, and it makes a lot of sense when you really look at what they do as an organization. They're digitizing globally financial transactions around the world. So through their exchanges and the clearing on their platforms, they've taken things like the New York Stock Exchange, which had COVID happened a few years ago, it would have significantly hampered the U.S. economy and trading globally because it really wasn't built to handle a virtual trading environment. And ICE came in and digitized that entire exchange as they've done for exchanges around the world. So that, coupled with their expertise and focus on data, made us a perfect addition to the ICE family because that's what we're in the process of doing, is digitizing this entire mortgage transaction and the amount of data that we have, which we have not historically had the expertise to unlock. Now, with the help of ICE, gives us the opportunity of taking that data, of course, in an anonymized way. We always protect our lenders' data, but now giving that data back to those lenders so that they can make better, more informed and real-time decisions. So from our perspective, it's going great. Really no major reorganizations. It's just about bringing everybody from MERS and Simplifile and LMA together as one team.
Good. And at one team is under your leadership. Am I correct, Joe?
Yeah, that's correct. We've had a great legacy of incredible leaders from Sigan, our founder, to Jonathan Corr, who really helped drive the next phase of growth. And I've been with the company with both of those leaders. I get the benefit of seeing them work firsthand and being able to continue the strong culture we've built at Ellie Mae, which is all about our customers. It's funny, David, we tell new hires when they come in any other company you've worked at, no matter how important you think that your product was that you were developing, at the end of the day, ours is very unique, right? If you work for a company and their ERP system doesn't work that day and you want to take the day off, you just send an email to your supervisor letting them know, hey, next Tuesday, I want to be off. For us, if our solutions are not available, lenders have to send hundreds of people home in the middle of the day. And so we take that responsibility very seriously. Yeah. And it's part of our core culture from SIG to Jonathan that our customers can expect that will be a big part of my focus going forward. So I'm excited to lead this new organization. You really won't see anything different in the way we conduct business, the way we engage customers and put them first. It's core to who we are as an organization.
That's outstanding. One of the things about ICE is they deal in nanoseconds, Joe, and the mortgage industry moves at glacial speeds. Now it's your leadership. Really excited to get your vision. Where should we anticipate Ellie Mae going in the months and years ahead?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question, David. And one of the things that ICE really saw in us was an alignment philosophically about what problems we're trying to solve. I've been in this industry for 25 years. And I've operated in all phases of this industry, from a three-digit chums number as an underwriter to running production to running operations to being a chief credit and risk officer to being a chief operations officer of an independent mortgage bank. I know that this industry has largely not changed much in the last 25 years in terms of being very forms-centric, very milestone-based, a very serialized manufacturing process. And the vision that we have is, in order to go fast, the first thing that we believe you need to do is you need to change the paradigm of this being a serialized synchronous process and making it a task-based asynchronous process so that tasks cannot just be performed at the same time, but so that they can be automated. And that's a big key to our focus. I know there's been speculation in the industry about when is the next generation of our platform Encompass going to come out. We actually released it last year. It's in production, completely web-based solution with the largest correspondent lender in the country who's fully deployed and fully rolled out on it. It introduces task-based workflow with a heavy emphasis on automation. We've started to really change the paradigm in how this industry operates and how loans are originated. You'll now see us continue that focus as we bring that same task-based workflow automation focus into our retail and wholesale channel solutions for Encompass. But it's just the tip of the spear. What you're also going to see from us is we're breaking down every function of this manufacturing process and identifying the individual opportunities for automation. So for example, in underwriting, which I'm a former underwriter, I know it's been one of the areas where industries really struggle, that because there's high volume. We've identified a set of solutions. We've broken out that underwriting into about 32 disparate tasks. And we're now in the process of rolling out automation solutions for each task. Perfect example, underwriting income. There's a spectrum there from self-employed borrowers with complex K-1s and Schedule Cs and Schedule Es and all sorts of significant underwriting, but also the majority of the loans being underwritten today are W-2 and pay stub employees. Right. So we started there where the majority was. And so we introduced a new solution called Income Analyzer. And basically what it does, and again, I'm speaking as a former underwriter, it underwrites pay stubs and W-2s, not just performing the calculation. That's pretty easy to do. You're multiplying by 24 or 26. This actually compares the data on the W-2 to the data on the pay stub. It makes sure that the payor, the payee, everything matches. So we're using automated data recognition technology that we've developed through our acquisition of Capsilon with our automated data extraction capabilities that was part of Capsilon, but we've now put a next-gen lens on that using neural networks. And so we're now able to save significant time for a lender in underwriting the income. Those underwriters can focus on the more complex, more difficult aspects of underwriting the income. And our intent is we're about to roll out our credit analyzer, which will underwrite the credit reports, our collateral underwriter, which will underwrite the appraisals, the AUS analyzer, which will real-time underwrite the findings that come from an AUS engine along with the data that real-time gets added to the system. So you're going to see a big focus on us transforming this industry in the next year. And ICE is only looking for ways to accelerate that delivery.
That is so important. I'm a DE underwriter too. I didn't know that we shared that in common. So what we're seeing in the way of any type of automation to really increase the volume of loans that a single underwriter can underwrite, gone down to, I think, an industry average of 2.5 days pretty consistently across the clients that we work with. We hear that across the board. It used to be in my last mortgage company, which was in Southern California, just down the coast from you there, some of the better ones could do 12 a day. What do you predict on the ability to get that level of productivity out of the underwriting just in that area?
Yeah, and we're looking at our target is a tenfold increase in capacity for writers. Now, the way we want to do this, though, is we know that when you're leveraging automation, it's all about your appetite for risk as a lender. And so the way we deploy this is anywhere from a completely headless process where no one needs to touch anything to purely exception-based, where that lender still has that safety net of saying, I want to deploy each of these automation solutions one at a time, or I want to do them all at the same time, but I want to have an outlet. So the lender will always be able to set the threshold for what constitutes an exception in their world. That way, the underwriters are still involved in the process if that's what a lender wants, but they can increase their efficiency and capacity by only looking at the exceptions, not having to look at the routine calculations that the technology can perform. At the end of the day, as an underwriter, what you're really doing is you're comparing data to data. It's an investor guideline to the data that you're receiving from the borrower or from all the third parties involved in the manufacturing process. So we also intend to address that because we happen to own an asset called AllRegs, consolidated, aggregated, centralized location of every investor guideline in the industry. So as we codify that, and then we compare that to the data that's entering the system real time, again, it provides incredible ability for automation or exception-based processing, whatever the lender's appetite is.
You talked about the collateral analyzer. You talked about credit analyzer. When are these products going to be rolled out, Joe?
So Income Analyzer is live now. We're helping lenders increase their capacity in some cases by 80% on the income underwrite component of the process.
Wow.
We're also now doing the testing with a small group of customers on the credit analyzer. So underwriting real time, the credit report. And it's not just real time, it's throughout the entire process. So people don't have to remember to go back and check. We're in beta with our collateral analyzer product. So underwriting the appraisal real time, and as somebody who's underwritten a ton of appraisals, it's just such a laborious process of reviewing the comps and checking the adjustments. We automate all of that now. And you'll see in 2021, every quarter, our intention is to be releasing some of these additional automation capabilities, along with we just released our automated service ordering feature in Encompass, which essentially automates a lot of the processor functions with a lender can set the threshold that says, my credit report comes back. If the FICO is above this and I don't see a trade line that shows a BK or a charge-off or a collection account, automatically order the next service in our unique process. And so ASO, automated service ordering, enables the lender to deploy that. The lender sets the thresholds and it just automatically orders each service and doesn't order the next one until the previous service's data has met the threshold of the lender.
And there's so many exciting things that you have under development. I can't wait for those. And we're waiting impatiently. I think the thing is there's so much pain because of what we're paying now underwriters. You look at what you and I got paid back when we were in those roles. It is, talk about a 10X. It seems like 10X. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but it's a significant increase of the cost specifically in the area of underwriting. Like, is it going to be the leader and be able to reduce the overall cost to originate? It seems like you're doing so much with some of the customization fields that are there. But talk about the cost to originate and what is Ellie Mae's vision to dramatically improve the cost to originate a loan these days?
Yeah, so our perspective is we feel that we're already the market leader in helping to lower the cost of origination. So we've brought in a number of different third-party firms to meet with our customers and to meet with non-customers and to compare the differences between the two. The cost of origination continues to grow. Now, you've seen it somewhat plateau recently, but that's really driven by volume. So that's really an artificial lowering cost of origination, right?
Yep.
As volumes come back to a normalized area, that number is going to jump back up again to $9,000, close to $10,000. So there's a number of studies which we've actually already published that shows lenders on our platform utilizing the services that are made available, most of which are at no additional cost to lenders that are on the platform. Things like investor delivery with Investor Connect, where we package up the data and the documents and securely deliver it to whatever investor or lender works with. That's just an added value of the system. Consumer Connect, our point of sale system that has over 1,500 lenders using it today. By far and away, it's the market leader from a POS in the mortgage industry. That's also part of the investment. No additional costs for that. So these third parties have come in and they're showing there is an over $1,000 advantage per loan in leveraging our system and lowering your cost of origination. What drives us as a company, and again, this gets back to our heritage with SIG and with Jonathan, is we're focused on lenders and how we can help them reduce the overall cost of origination. What you're going to see from us is continued focus on helping lenders lower that cost of origination by adding more things that are just part of their investment and not charging them incrementally for it, but really focus on deploying technology that solves problems, increases capacity without them having to add people. And so that's what drives every one of the roadmaps that we have for every product at ICE Mortgage Technology.
Process is a big part of that. And I know we do a ton of that consulting where we're going in and working with processes. You guys do that internally. When someone picks up and uses an LMA solution, you're also very much involved in that. How do you see the process being reinvented? What's your roadmap, your vision, Joe, for a reinvented mortgage process?
If you look, David, at what we've been focusing on, we put a big focus on the point of sale and making sure that Consumer Connect was market leading. We did that for a couple of reasons. One is, obviously, that's where the market was going. We knew it was going to be more of a touchless engagement, and consumers want the ability to upload documents through mobile devices. They want statuses pushed to them without having to come. So we knew that was a big focus. But really, the key was laying the foundation for ultimately being able to underwrite, call it 95% of the loan, real time, as the consumer or an originator is entering information into an application.
Good.
So our intent is, if you look at it, what is underwriting all about? It's comparing data that you're receiving to data that you need to send to make sure it meets guidelines. It's no different than any other manufacturing process. You're manufacturing to a set of specifications. In mortgage, you're underwriting to an investor specification. So if you think about what we've been doing now in our ability, especially in our system, our network, we now brought together through MERS, the largest network of investors, through Simplifile, the largest network of settlement agents and county yes. recorders, and through Ellie Mae, the largest network of service providers and lenders. And so as we connect to all of these networks, it gives us the ability to real-time access whatever data is needed in order to tell that consumer or that originator, while they're entering the application, not that you're conditionally approved, not that you're pre-approved, but that you're approved. And there might be a few trailing documents. We're still working through ways that we can eliminate those as well. But the goal is to underwrite the loan real time. And that would happen whether it's retail or through, we have some of the largest wholesale lenders in the country that are on our platform using our TPO Connect solution, which essentially right. is how brokers submit the information. We're going to do the same thing. So a broker would know instantly that their loan is fully approved.
What does the world look like in a post-conservatorship, Fannie and Freddie? How are you responding to that? Are you anticipating any tectonic-type shifts as a result of that? What's your thoughts? Let's get your thought leadership on that.
Let's assume that there is a level playing field if they come out of conservatorship and there's an opportunity for others to play a similar role. I think in our industry, there's a number of players that are prepared to step up and to step in. And one of the things that we've been doing is removing a lot of the friction that occurs between the lender and the secondary market. So when you go and you talk to most of the large secondary market players, they'll tell you that 70 to 75% of the sellers are on Encompass. So that gives us a huge opportunity to work together with them and yes. figure out what are the friction points. So Investor Connect allows a lender on Encompass through a single click of a button to package up all of the data and all of the documents that are needed for that specific investor that they work with and present it to the investor in a way so that they don't have to now take that and send it offshore to re-image and index it. They're able to receive the data directly. We just introduced a bi-directional capability so that investor and that lender's funding organization can talk real time, remove conditions and post-funding steps. But our roadmap and our intention with those investors and what they've bought into, we want to remove the post-funding conditions before the loan is funded. So as we're able to get into the black boxes of each of those investors, and we already have the guidelines in all regs, and let that lender know before you're ready to fund this loan, you likely have 2, 4, 7 post-funding conditions if you're sending it to this investor. If any of those involve the borrower, let's get that addressed at the funding table so you're not chasing things down while the borrower is trying to unpack moving boxes. So our vision is we not only want to underwrite these loans real time, we want to have certainty of delivery into the secondary market with zero post-funding conditions.
It's an amazing vision, especially with the potential complexity of having more competing parties coming to the table. You got your work cut out for you. But like you said, you got all regs. So you got all the data there in the raw, somewhat mumble-jumbled way at the point. But at least you have a shot at bringing it together probably better than anyone else. I was thinking as I was listening to you talk, Joe, are you sure you didn't run sales there at one point in time? Because you're doing a heck of a job talking about the sales side of it. It's very convincing. I love your vision. I love how articulate you are. Again, it goes to the whole team. You guys have always had such great executives at the company. And so not surprised. Let me go to the shift over to the COVID issue. What have you learned out of COVID? And what is your prediction for a distributive workforce moving forward? And how is Ellie Mae continue to respond to that?
Yeah, let me just say, David, I'm hopefully not coming across as we're trying to sell anything. It's just so exciting, as long as I've been in it, to actually see the finish line. Now, we talk at Ellie Mae about our North Star, and we just feel like we've never been closer to realizing that we are now. Really lucky. And so we were lucky that Thoma Bravo also saw the opportunity for growth. ICE is a completely different animal. They are all about how do we help you go faster? How do we help you deliver value faster? So you can't help but be excited about that. But to answer your question regarding COVID, we had about a 2.5 week period where our lenders and our 300,000 users all had to go from being largely in offices and centralized to being 100% virtual. So first and foremost, it was amazing to see how well our customers, as well as how well our technology enabled that shift so that everybody was able to work virtually. Collaboration is a really big part of lender's ability to continue to stay connected and process the historic amount of volume that they have. So we're looking at how can we enhance that collaboration even further with our expectations of it's never going to go back to the way it was. It'll get back in some areas. I'm sure that you'll start to see, especially organizations that had centralized processing centers, some of those folks are starting to come back in our client base. You'll see some more. But for the most part, I don't think you're going to be able to put the genie back in the bottle fully. And quite honestly, our industry has been doing this with underwriters for the last 5 to 6 years where they've been working remotely. So when we think about that, it's all about how do we enable better collaboration? So one of the initiatives we're focusing on is essentially industry-wide chat. These networks we have, right, where we've got all the investors through MERS. We have all the settlement title agents and counties through Simplifile and everybody else through Ellie Mae. ICE actually has a global chat function that it uses to connect all parties in financial transactions. And we're excited about how we can leverage that and basically connect the entire ecosystem so real time they could chat with anybody regarding any loan at any time. So that's one thing we're looking at. The other is just general collaboration between key parties. So if you think about e-close, even a hybrid, collaboration is critical because there's documents that the lender prepares, but there's documents that are prepared by the title and escrow officers. They have a lot of great attributes, but that collaboration piece is unparalleled in the industry, where not only can they bring in fee information, quote information, but the documents and keeping everybody in sync and on the same page, that's a big part of what you're going to see in our hybrid e-closing, which launches in just a few weeks. We've already been tested with customers. So hybrid comes out in just a few weeks. And then our full, you know, comprehensive e-note, e-close, e-vault, that will be coming out in the first half of 2020. And we're excited about some of the unique advantages that Simplifile will create, because collaboration is going to be the key now in this current COVID and post-COVID world.
Yeah. First of all, congratulations on all those exciting things, and we can't wait for them to happen. That's why I told everybody when I saw these two companies come together, ICE acquire you guys, I saw just a new life and a new vision. And I've talked to you so many times in the past. I love the vision you have, but I was really concerned about the Thoma Bravo. As good a partner as it was, we were anticipating that. I want to talk briefly about the opportunities for people that are looking and saying, hey, I think I want to get on board, literally get inside of and work for Ellie Mae. What are some of the opportunities that are opening up that you could talk about?
Yeah, the great news here is we are hiring everywhere. As a distributed company, before COVID, half of Ellie Mae's workforce worked remotely. And so we've got great muscle in being able to collaborate virtually. Everybody's been learning about what the Zoom thing is. We've been on Zoom for going on 2 years because we found it as a great collaboration tool. Our CISO works very closely with the CEO of Zoom to help them as they're continuing to grow and expand. So we got great insight into different collaboration tools. So right now we're hiring everywhere. And because ICE's focus for us is let's go faster. Let's deliver more value to your lenders as fast as we can. And when I say globally, we have offices now in Poland. We have offices in Pune, India. We have offices located throughout the country here. We have resources in South America. So we're excited to pool all of these resources, all focused on how do we deliver this innovation faster.
It's exciting. I can't wait to see how this starts happening faster. ICE is about moving things faster. That was very clear. I've interviewed the previous two or three executives of ICE. I'm very excited. I think that's probably the thing that we have got to see happen in our industry. We've got to get out of some lot of locked in legacy. And I'd love to get you on and talk more about that. But as I want to wrap up on a very important topic you brought up earlier, and that's data. You look at the power of data. And first of all, kudos to your marketing department because they send out these data reports. We're seeing these trends. We're seeing what's going on there. We need more of that. Stratmore does a great job. MBA does a great job. But it's a big rearview mirror. You guys are dealing in real-time data. Is there more that we can look for as we move forward in the future on real-time data and get better metrics of what's happening in the marketplace?
Absolutely, David. One of the advantages for us that we saw with ICE, and quite honestly that ICE saw with us, is we sit on one of the most unique data sets in the industry. To your point, a lot of people that are consuming data today are consuming public records data. Depending upon the county of where that gets recorded, it's sometimes it is 4 months after that loan is funded. And so if you think about the data that we sit on, we're at just about 50% market share is where we'll likely end 2020 in terms of total volume coming across the industry that's on our platform. So when you look at that's a statistically significant sample size of 50% of the volume on the platform. But what our data tells you is not what happened. Our data tells you what's happening right now and what's going to happen in the next 45 to 60 days. Now, first and foremost, we will never compromise the confidentiality of our lenders' data. So we're talking about an anonymized data set here. But that anonymized data set from creating indices that the global financial markets can use to even something as simple as mortgage-backed securities when you're pricing and when you're trying to adjust for risk and determining prepays. Think about it. Right now, those MBSs are leveraging public records data as leading indicators. And that's, in some cases, 6 months later than the data right now. So the ability for us to help the entire industry get sharper and more focused on better pricing, better risk adjustments by just leveraging the data is very exciting, not only for us, but for the industry. And so we've started this process with a new solution we introduced about 2 quarters ago called Ellie Mae Insights. So right now, it is the only data solution where a lender can do real-time peer benchmarking analysis. So they can say, show me lenders that look like me, lend where I'm lending with this loan product in this zip code with this sort of demographics, and it'll tell you how you're doing against your competition. Again, all anonymized, but it's also machine learning based. So the more you interact with it, the more it knows the type of questions that you or other people like you are looking for, and it serves up the data for you.
I can't wait to get more. We could go into data because it's one of my favorite topics moving forward is not only great innovation, but this data, because this is going to be about the data, especially when we start looking at the behavioral tendencies of the Gen Zers and the millennials as they move into it. There's a great book out that I recommend everyone by Alex Hansen of loanDepot, senior vice president there, wrote a book called Bypass. It's talking about the behavior of consumer in an ever digital process. I want to have you back, Joe. We can talk more on that. We're out of time. It's such a thrill. I want to say thank you so much to what you have done in your leadership there at Ellie Mae. And Joe, I just want to wish you the very best as you take on the helm and really steer this into the next chapter of Ellie Mae's success. Very excited for you.
Well, thank you, David. I appreciate the time to be with you. And as you can tell, we're really excited here at ICE Mortgage Technology.
Yeah, I don't have a dim view on sales. I think it's a strong thing, but you're very enthusiastic, and that can come across sometimes. So, no, you weren't selling. You were just talking enthusiastically as a point of clarification. Joe, thanks so much for being on here. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, David.
That was a good interview. I encourage you to share that with others. A lot of exciting stuff going on in the industry. Appreciate you being here with us and sending your ideas of things that you see going on. We're going to be continuing down this path of innovation, technology, and exciting announcement. We're going to be launching a new podcast on the topic at the beginning of the year. So if you're interested in learning more about that, advertising on that, I'd love to hear from you. Folks, we want to say a special thank you to all of our sponsors again as we wrap up the podcast. Finastra, going the extra mile to help you with their technology, as well as the Community Mortgage Lenders of America, the MBA, Indicom, Accelerate, Ainsworth Advisors, Mobility, RE, Modex. Thank you so much for so many of you who write me and share positive feedback about how this podcast is encouraging you, informing you, and just being a service to you. That's what we're here for. It's a free podcast out to you. It's made possible by our sponsors. So again, thank you to our sponsors. Have a great week, everybody. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.